serious business. It means it's business time when I've taken off my glasses.
I'll take mine off too.
Sweet.
All right.
Sweet, sweet. Cool. Whenever you are ready, I am ready, and let's hope for a seamless technological experience.
Yes, agreed. Welcome, everybody, to Living in Letterbox, a podcast all about movies. My name is Andrew LaPointe.
And I'm Stephen Keyswetter.
And we bring you a brand new podcast every month, as opposed to once a week, because one of us is just swamped by life.
Yeah, it's not me.
It's not you. I was pointing my finger at you.
Oh, yeah, that's me. Yeah, but life is amazing. I don't mind being swamped by it when it's an adventure every day and it's pretty awesome. So
yeah, true. It's not a bad thing. I mean, we all complain a lot, but I don't know. Do we really have a lot to complain about, you and I?
Nope. No, we have nothing to complain about. Seriously.
No.
That's quite a longer discussion, but on the grand scheme of things, we have very, very little to complain about.
Yes. All right. Well, I think there's one movie that we should probably kick off the show with.
Sure. Because I don't even know what movie that is.
I know that I think it might be the only movie that you and I have both seen in the past month. Or
okay.
Maybe not. I guess I will find out. Sharknado. The viral phenomenon, the new I guess you can say it's a new midnight. Well, I don't know if it's played at midnight anywhere.
It's sort of the new insta cult classic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, everything, the word cult is, you know, thrown around a lot in the days of you know, with the internet and everything. I mean, mm-hmm. People seem to forget that there aren't that many true cult classics. You know, I mean, you have Rocky Horror Picture Show, you have El Topo, you have Night of the Living Dead, you have Freaks, Reefer Madness, you know, Pink Flamingos, Eraserhead, and you know, I guess now you can add The Room to that list, because that is certainly a midnight hit here in Ottawa, where we are recording. It plays at the theater that I work at once a month to packed houses. Mm-hmm. And Sharknado, which was made for cable.
Yes.
And it's certainly not a first. I mean, you know, there's so many of these shark hybrid movies.
And I've probably seen way more of them than you have. I have a sneaking suspicion. If, you know, whether it's dino sharks or sharktopuses or crocosauruses. I've seen at least 80% of them. I'm a sucker for
crocs. Usually it's a showdown between two things, like dino shark or pterodactyl versus I don't know, croco shark. I don't know. I can't
see everyone listening can tell that you don't watch these movies, cuz
well, I'm familiar with them. Certainly. Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. Roger Corman is responsible for a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And Sharknado is a product of this company called The Asylum, who are a production company who are normally, I guess they're notable for rip-offs. Mm-hmm. They do Transmorphers.
Mhm.
And I guess Atlantic Rim, and they're, you know, just flying on the wave of these popular blockbusters and creating their own semi-quasi-legal ripoffs.
Yeah, I do feel that they live in a sort of legal gray zone that very few people ever see. Like, it amazes me that these films really do get released and made without any repercussions. Because I read an article that said Asylum has made something like 200 feature films and they've never lost a penny. Like, it's all profit for them. Mm-hmm. And you got to wonder why the big guys don't chase them. But, you know, who knows?
I think they might have been taken to court once, but I'm not certain about that. We may have to go to the.
I think actually we may have touched on that once briefly before. Now that it sounds familiar, but I think it was the Hobbit project that they had. I think it got delayed or renamed or something.
What did they call it?
It was literally just like The Tale of a Hobbit or something. It wasn't
okay. So
like,
they actually used the word Hobbit. They didn't like do a variation on it, like the Moppet or something.
No. I'm pretty sure like they just used the word as it was. It was called Age of the Hobbits. That was the name of the film.
Okay.
And they were sued over it, but I'm not quite sure what the end result was. But yeah, Age of the Hobbits is an official Asylum film that came out around the same time as Peter Jackson's A Hobbit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Funny that. But okay, here's the thing though. Sharknado shouldn't be as popular as it is. And
no.
I think what's really interesting about it is the social media that gets built behind it. It's Snakes on a Plane all over again.
Yeah, that's a good example.
It's hype. And I mean, for me personally, the movie delivers in the sense that it was entertaining. I enjoyed it. But I mean, for Joe Blow sitting at home, I guarantee that they talk about Sharknado. They've all shared the trailer, but I'd say 90% of the people talking about it will never actually watch the film seen it.
And it's all because of the title. The title is what has created this, you know, phenomenon over the internet. Because you know, these movies are getting made every week. But Sharknado is the perfect title, and that's, you know, it alone is making people laugh. So that's what's really that's what's created the popularity behind it. It's not the movie itself.
No, but the movie's kind of fun.
It sort of is. I can't say that it's so bad it's good. It's not quite there.
No.
It, you know, it's pretty. I think in a lot of ways pretty pedestrian as far as, you know, grade Z bad CGI monster movies go, but there is some inspiration behind it, you know.
Right,
some of it is kind of amusing and funny.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's pretty disposable in a sense that it's no different. Like, it's so telegraphed. I mean, it's more just sort of how are they going to get there. But what I thought was really cool about seeing this movie, and I mean, you've already nailed it, it's a TV movie. It was made for TV, but it became such a pop culture phenomenon that it got a short-lived theatrical run, which is weird. I mean, here's something that people can watch for free in their living rooms, and we are lucky to have a theater that played it on the big screen. I had not seen the trailer. I mean, I knew of the movie. It was on my radar to see eventually. And when I found that I was going to be able to see on the big screen, I made a point of waiting to watch it for the first time in the big screen. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, Andrew, I went out that evening going to the theater, not knowing how many people were going to be there, kind of expecting, you know, a dozen folk to be at our friendly local theater. But instead, what I ended up doing was standing in the line forever to get into the theater to find a packed house. Like, it was amazing. Yeah. There was over 300 people at what, from what I've been told, is the most successful Canadian screening of the film. That just boggles my mind, and that made it entertaining. I talk a lot about the experience of seeing movies, and watching that by myself at home or even with a couple people doesn't hold a candle to going to a packed house where people are just there to make fun of a movie, heckle it. They know what they're in for, and that's what I appreciate about it. That's what's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a midnight movie is that the audience participation transcends the movie itself.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of whether it's a good movie or a bad movie, and usually it's a bad or a silly movie.
Mm. Well, I mean, when you were listing midnight films, I'd say about half of those are not even films that I'm particularly fond of. I mean, I give them credit for what they do, but I'm not, you know, I'm not inclined to naturally like a cult midnight film just because it is a cult midnight film.
How many of those have you seen on the big screen, though? Or have you seen any of those?
I've seen a good chunk of them. Not necessarily as midnight screenings. I think the only one of the stuff that comes to mind that you had listed that I haven't seen on the big screen was Rocky Horror. And not for want of, or not for the fact that I have no access to it. I live in a town where it plays, you know, regularly on the big screen. I just really don't like that movie. I don't really get it. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of its own. I appreciate it as, you know, this cultural institution. I mean, that's really what it is. More than a movie. And I like the music a lot, but I've never really sat down and watched it from beginning to end.
Right.
So I can't say that I'm a fan because, you know, if you're a fan of Rocky Horror, you are a full blown, you know,
every word,
fan.
Have a costume, can do all the dance moves kind of fan. those are what Rocky Horror fans are.
But anyway, getting back to Midnight Movies, I've seen pretty much all the, you know, the certified Midnight movies. I've seen El Topo on the big screen, although it wasn't a Midnight screening. You know, I've seen Freaks, which I love. I've seen, of course, I've seen Night of the Living Dead, which I love, and Eraserhead. But now it's different now. I mean, with home video and the internet, pretty much anything could be a Midnight movie.
That's true.
And it seems that, you know, with last Saturday night, with the attendance at the theater that we were both at, this could be the next Midnight hit, if that many people, if it's going to be triple digit attendance.
Well, I mean,
or maybe it's just a one off thing. It's really hard to tell.
I feel like it's a one off thing, but I mean, I wouldn't begrudge any theater to try and replicate it again. Like, I mean, if people would, I don't know, like I would go see it again because I'm silly like that, but I've only seen The Room once. I have no desire to see that movie again.
Mm-hmm. And so there are people they want to see that every month. And I'm not like that with any movie. I don't want to watch the same movie every 30 days. Even if it is this experience, this interactive experience, it's just not my thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude, I don't have enough time to watch movies to watch the same movies over and over again every 30 days.
Me neither.
And I mean, this logistically just doesn't make any sense.
You and I have so much that we are not watching that we should, and we never know where to start.
Yeah.
That I think the difference between us and the people who want to see The Room or Rocky Horror or maybe Sharknado every month is that I don't think they're movie fans the way we're movie fans. I think with them, it's just this one little thing that they celebrate.
Yeah.
Like a club or something.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fairly fair assessment. And every person who likes The Room is probably screaming at us right now going, no.
not that we're putting it down.
No.
You know?
No, I mean, exactly. Like, I get that. But it does seem to see those sort of films that are capture the imaginations of the wider public. It's not necessarily people, like you said, who are invested in films the same way we are. They're just out for a laugh, for a good time, that sort of thing. And I think it's mostly about introducing it to other people. It's almost has this sort of cult-like mechanic where The Room, it's almost more fun to watch it with someone else, I imagine, who hasn't seen it yet.
And you want to gauge their reaction.
Yeah, it's almost like the snowball effect. So you keep passing it on. And this is why I think there's literally an infinitely long list of you know, people who will go see this film because they keep getting conned into going to see this silly film. And then they bring someone. It's kind of like, I don't know if it's kind of similar to this bit that Ellen DeGeneres used to have where, you know, sometimes when you taste something really gross and then your first reaction is like, oh man, you should taste this. It's disgusting. Like, why do we do that? Like, why do we share things that we don't enjoy? But I think The Room's like that. I think people are just so flabbergasted by it. They're like, I just saw this thing and it's kind of like a movie and it was insane. And you got to come. Let's go. You got to see this. And it's sort of that mentality where it's like sharing garbage with people because it's, I don't know. Clearly I'm not a huge Room fan. But
yeah, I can tell.
I don't really understand it.
Well, I mean, do you not enjoy, is it because you don't find it funny? You don't enjoy, you don't like laughing at it? I mean, what does it?
No, because remember, I'm the guy who doesn't like comedies, but much rather would rather laugh at a movie for comedic element. But The Room just doesn't, it's just so, I don't know. I think maybe it's the persona of Tommy Wiseau, like his that sort of super stoic seriousness that I don't get. It just doesn't do anything for me. Like I feel if he was in on the joke, it'd be better. But I really kind of feel sad for him because I think he feels he's made a masterpiece and that.
Well, I wouldn't feel sad for him because he's laughing all the way to the bank with this film.
Yeah, that's true. That's
and true. He's probably I think he is a millionaire. I mean, consider. That he bought a 35mm camera, he bought all these lights, he bought an HD camera, he shot the film simultaneously on HD and 35mm. You gotta kind of have a lot of money to do that.
That's true.
And there's the mystery, of course, is where did he get all this money? And if you ask him, he'll refuse to answer. But, you know, he's definitely reaping all the benefits of this film, whether in the way he intended or not.
Fair enough. I mean, his drive is admirable because it's not even his first film. So he, you know, clearly loves making movies. So I would never begrudge someone to make a movie, regardless of whether or not it ends up being good or bad. But I just, yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't click for me. There's really no specific reasoning why. I was all gung-ho the first time I saw it, which would have been about 2 years ago. I showed up with a box of plastic spoons and ready to have fun. Really, that's what you think about The Room?
That's what my dog thinks about The Room.
That's what I meant. Yeah, I mean, that's about my, yeah.
That was a real dog barking. That's a real dog barking. That's not some cheesy radio sound effect button that DJs press.
You've got a keyboard in front of you. When you press a button, one of the keys makes a barking sound. And you were like, bark, bark. Bark, 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 pressing that key. I know you. But I don't even know, why are we talking about The Room? I don't really want to talk about
because in general we're talking about
it's Sharknado. And I think that, no,
let's focus on Sharknado.
Sharknado does not have the sort of enigmatic allure and peculiarity that The Room has. So that it has no potential.
Although they're both played straight.
I don't know. The thing I liked about Sharknado, I think, is compared to some of the other sci-fi network, they're a little bit more wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This one played it really straight in the sense that the lead actor, Mr. Beverly Hills, he really delivers a somewhat nuanced emotional performance in which he transitions from a surfer goes to bar to a superhero.
It's a perfectly superhero. Yeah, it's a perfectly, you know, competent performance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone's saying that the movie's full of bad acting. I mean, you know, I know Tara Reid is a verbal punching bag for a lot of people, but I mean, in terms of Mr. 90210, he's perfectly fine as the lead hero.
Yeah, quite good, actually. I think he's found, it's his niche. He needs to do more creature feature films where he, you know, is a badass, but that's, you know, I think that's potential because a lot of actors have fallen into that sort of, you know, typecast element, but maybe that'll happen for him.
Well, usually these films are filled with TV veterans, you know, people who were a big star on a TV series like 15 years ago.
Right.
But let's talk a bit about the shark action, which is probably, you know, what people care about the most is, you know, the kills and the, you know, the set pieces of the film, you know, basically the film starts with a hurricane and then the Sharknado comes later. Or there's like three Sharknados at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's not, and they don't even call it. Like, first off, in a movie like this, they should actually say, oh my God, there's a Sharknado, just because it would be stupid and ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not even tornadoes. They're, what do they call them in the film? They're like a water tunnel or something. Yeah, but it's not. Like, clearly, like, the title is stapled onto the film because there's no mention of tornadoes. They're not actually even tornadoes. But, yeah, so I thought that was kind of intriguing. But you're right. There is a lot of shark action. They do not pull any punches when it comes to on-screen shark craziness.
But, I mean, a lot of it because I guess they shot this film in L.A. Since it was set in L.A. and they shoot a lot of it in tight close-ups to hide the fact that, you know, it's pretty hard to fake a storm in L.A. Yeah. And, you know, they close the iris on the camera a lot to make it look kind of gloomy and stormy, you know.
And
so it's all very, you know, obvious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no one's going to.
Of course.
Plus, it's budgetary, right? Like, it's
definitely.
Like, it fits the B movie vibe of the movie. But it is also very much because of, you know, the restraints of the budget. Because I have no idea what the budget of the movie is, but it couldn't have been a lot.
I believe it was $1 million.
Okay. Well, that's still a serious chunk of change, but you got to.
Well, in the movie business, that's you know, that's chump change. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger's energy bar budget.
Yeah, that's about it. But yeah, I don't know. I there are a lot of other shark films, and there are rumors now that there's going to be a sequel. I know that people are talking about Shark-a-Lanch and Shark-Nommies and all kinds of other possible disaster films crossed with shark attack films. So hopefully we get lots of those.
Or shark, maybe Sharks at Niagara Falls.
Oh, that would be awesome. People go made what's it called? Made in the Mist?
Made of the Shark.
Yeah. Made of the Shark. Oh, yeah.
Shark Falls.
Shark Falls. Well, that sounds like a drama, some sort of, that's not good. We don't want to. But yeah, there's also, there's Snow Shark and Sand Shark that already exists. Like, that's the thing. There are all these ridiculous movies anyways. And so I'm not 100% certain why this, and I think you nailed it. It's the title. It's why this one sort of captured the zeitgeist of the moment, because all those other shark movies don't get any. And I know that there are actors, directors, producers sitting around going, yeah, but we made a shark movie that was ridiculous 2 years ago and it didn't become like a thing. So,
well,
it was just right time, right place.
It's the lesson that people forget. You know, we're living in an age where so much, the success of a movie depends so much on who's in it and how much money they spend on marketing and what weekend they opened it at, that they forget that sometimes it's as simple as what's the title of the film.
Yeah.
And I've been working at a movie theater for the past 4 years now, and a lot of the time people show up to buy a ticket. They don't know the title of the movie that they're buying a ticket for. They're at a loss for words. Can I get one for, honey, what's that movie called? I mean, that happens all the time.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I guess I'm so naive to think that people actually know what they're going out to see.
Well, I think part of the reason is people just don't get out much, and they, you know, maybe they go out to a movie like once or twice a year.
Right.
So they're not, maybe the title's just easy for them to forget or something like that.
Or they're just seeing movie 9 p.m. or movie 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Like it's what fits their schedule.
The new Tom Cruise movie. You know.
Yep. No, that's true. Oh, total aside, because this happened again to me today. I work, sell movies at my store, and constantly people come in asking to buy a movie that's playing in theaters, and it drives me nuts. I just had to put that out there right now. Like, it's so funny. People are like, oh, can I get so-and-so movie? And I'm like, it just opened in theaters last night. You will have to wait 3 to 4 months before it comes out. And it's frustrating. That's my little aside. Because it happened again today. And I was like, what is going on? Why do people not realize that movies don't open into DVDs right away?
Yeah, they're not aware of that window of time.
And I don't understand why they're oblivious to it. I remember back when I worked at the video store, like a rental store, that for a while there, ads used to have the only in theaters sort of tag. And I used to have concerned customers come in and be like, does that mean it'll never come out?
My dad asked me that question once.
Oh, really?
Only in theaters. Does that mean it'll never be out on video?
Yeah. And so clearly even that angle doesn't solve that problem. Like, they, even at that time, they knew people thought if they saw a preview on TV that they could just go rent it. So they add only in theaters, but the inverse is, and people think it's never coming out.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I felt for you. You don't remember what movie it was, was he? That would be awesome. Snakes on a Plane. We'll just say that. Remember when Andrew's dad thought Snakes on a Plane was never going to leave theaters?
Snakes on a Plane.
I bet you, has your dad ever seen Snakes on a Plane?
Probably not.
No,
I have, though.
We got to fix that.
And he hasn't seen Sharknado either.
Nah, well, we don't need to fix that necessarily.
No. What, I mean, as far as these shark, I guess, you know, it's all a derivative from Jaws, right? The phenomenon of Jaws, which is, you know, let's face it, probably one of the best blockbusters ever made, or one of the best movies ever made. What would you say are the best or your personal favorites of the Jaws ripoffs?
It's not a Jaws ripoff, but for shark films, I'm head over heels in love with Deep Blue Sea.
I really like that movie too, actually.
Movie rules. It is.
People don't really, I don't know if people, I guess they still talk about the surprise death of Samuel L. Jackson in that movie. That's the moment that people remember. But that's a good one.
Yeah, I love that movie. And what about yourself? Are there any?
Well, definitely that one. I don't know. I mean, I guess we can mention the Jaws sequels. notably, Jaws the Revenge, probably, you know, one of the most ridiculous shark movies ever made. Mm-hmm. And Jaws 2 I like quite a bit, but I remember seeing Jaws 1 and 2 on a double bill. Mm. And I always liked Jaws 2, but I saw Jaws 2. Like, I think from now on, if I want to watch Jaws 2, I'm not going to watch it after the first one because it just pales in comparison because it's missing. It has Roy Scheider, but it is missing Robert Shaw and it is missing Richard Dreyfuss. I know, mm-hmm. you know, Robert Shaw gets eaten, but his presence is sorely missed in Jaws 2.
Well, I mean, it hasn't stopped movies before.
No.
From no. keeping characters alive. They should do a Jaws prequel. That's what they should do. I'm putting mm-hmm. that up there.
Well, as long as they don't make it a psychic shark or a whatever those sharks were in Jaws the Revenge.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense that all these sharks have some sort of communication network by which they follow people around the world.
Sharks with a vendetta.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't remember. I think we've done sharks before, I swear it.
I think we have,
I'm a huge fan of open water as well.
I haven't seen that. That's just two people in the water, right? It's like a...
Yeah, but it's. Yeah. I mean, it counts. There's sharks mm-hmm, in it. Mm-hmm. People and sharks. That's a shark movie. But I think that's it for the sharks today.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've run out of...
Yeah. Oh, there was this really opening sequence. Okay, yeah, we're done with Sharknado. That's enough. Okay. Listeners have either seen it or are never going to see it. We're never going to be able to convince them to see it.
If you haven't made your mind up in about 3 seconds of first hearing of that title, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
But moving on, let's move on. I want to know what else you've seen.
Well,
what other non-shark movies?
Where I delved into a few documentaries because mm-hmm. I found they fit my schedule pretty well. I was able to check out a few. And there was one in particular that actually I saw three that were awesome. I saw a couple, but three that were awesome. But one of them I thought, I don't know if you've seen, it's a documentary called Clean Flicks about...
I have heard of this.
You've seen this?
No, I know what it's about. I've heard of it. But
okay, cool.
It sounds very interesting.
It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Being someone who's always been interested in the process of censorship and the multiple iterations of films that are available around the world, I always wanted to check this out. And basically what it is this Mormon-based company based out of Utah would edit Hollywood blockbusters to purge them of offensive material so that their... followers of the Mormon belief could watch their movies, because how the Mormon church works in a nutshell is there are sort of leaders who are called, basically considered to be speaking directly the word of God. And one of the things that they've been told is that they are not allowed to watch R-rated films. Arbitrary. That's actually like a rule. Like, you can't watch R-rated films.
Mm-hmm.
So this company goes, well, there are a lot of R-rated films that are, you know, respectable and good. Let's say Andrew, you were Mormon and you really liked Russell Crowe. You can't. Well, why is that funny? That wasn't even meant to be funny.
Keep going. Oh, so, that's a great setup.
I'm
Mormon.
You're Mormon.
I have like five wives, and I like Russell Crowe.
No, that's not the same thing. But yes, okay. It's not okay. And so yes, but you're a big Russell Crowe fan, and you've always wanted to see Gladiator. But Gladiator, unfortunately, is a fairly violent film that is R-rated, and your belief system has told you explicitly that you cannot watch R-rated films. What if I told you that I would edit out all those spurts of blood and gratuitous boobies, and then you could watch the film knowing full well that you will not go to hell? Mm-hmm. How would you respond to that? You'd be pretty excited, eh?
Yeah, probably.
That's what this movie's about, is movies that are edited under a certain legal loophole that allowed these video stores and this company to build an extremely... good business editing Hollywood films.
Are these Mormon? Are these Mormon video stores?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, like actual video stores run by Mormons.
Or it's not like a regular video store with like a Mormon section. It's like a
This is like a full-on video store, and everything's edited, and it's like it's all alternate versions of popular films.
So they have a lot of like 5-minute versions of 2-hour movies.
Well, okay, no, thank you for saying that. This is the thing that I did not understand. One thing the documentary does really well is it'll play clips of a film in its entirety, the original version, and then back-to-back play the edited clip, all right? Mm-hmm. The differences sometimes are so minimal that it really begs the question whether you are going to go to hell if you watch one version or the other, because they use the Matrix as a good example. They show this extended sequence where people are shooting each other in the Matrix, but they excise just a little bit of blood, and all of a sudden, all that shooting's okay. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like it's sanitized violence, but it's still violence. Like,
I was waiting for the hypocrisy, right? That, you know.
Yeah, it's just, it made me shake my head. But what was really, really surprising is there's a university, a very famous university called the Brigham Young University in Utah, and it's sort of the heart, the center of Americana Mormonism. And I'm not picking on Mormons like it's, just willy-nilly. It just happens to be the subject matter of this documentary. But they have an on-site or an on-campus varsity theater. And one of the things this documentary brought to my attention that I was not aware of is this theater has been editing films since the 70s for this whole time. They've been screening movies and doing this. They've been splicing 35mm films to edited Mormon versions. And it wasn't until sort of the digital age, for lack of a better term, that we were able to make duplicate copies on DVDs. And then this whole industry grew up, this clean flicks kind of industry. And it's just fascinating stuff. You have to see this. You're going to love it. It's really, really interesting. The documentary is flawed because it does spend a little too much time focused on one particular individual who runs a company. And the reason they focus on them is they sort of – it takes a darker turn that involves some underage abuse and some child porn allegations and all sorts of craziness. Like it literally – you said the word hypocrisy? Right. Absolutely. You've got this gentleman, his name was Danny Thompson, or his name is Danny Thompson, who is the front for this very clean, family-friendly video store. But, you know, what was happening in the back rooms was far from upfront family values. And the movie kind of goes in that direction. And I guess because I was watching it mostly interested in the editing and the film element, I was less interested in his story. But it's fascinating stuff. I just totally recommend, because it literally will make your jaw drop. It's just some of the things that people say to justify how they can take what an art form like we both respect and just to kind of chop it up and then do it with no permissions granted. It's just the way they justify these legal loops. Wow. Watch it, do it. Everyone should see this movie.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It's crazy. Just craziness. That guy who was in that thing.
That guy who was in that, that is the name of a documentary.
That is the name of a documentary.
And we have both seen this one, so we can both crosstalk.
Excellent. Because, okay, first, here's the test. Here's the real test before we even tell people what it's about. Just between me and you, do you remember the name of any of the actors who were in this documentary? Off the top of your head?
I think there's one guy whose name I remember.
Yeah, that guy?
Zach Grenier, bald actor.
Okay, that sounds like a real name. Yep,
yeah. But again, this is a documentary about character actors.
Yes.
Who you see their face and you're like, I know that guy. But the name is not familiar.
But the face is definitely familiar.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting too is I only knew about half the actors, to be quite honest, who were interviewed in this. There were some of them definitely fit the title for me where I was like, oh yeah, that guy who was in that thing. And I actually felt myself saying that in my head and then laughing, going, ha, it's kind of funny that they did go with, like, they perfectly titled this documentary. But other actors who are featured who are really funny and engaging, I've never seen in anything. And I think part of it, the only thing that I felt I missed out when watching this documentary is that a lot of them are TV actors. And I admittedly don't watch a lot of the type of serialized TV like Prison Breaks. And,
no, me neither.
And I don't recognize, like, they would get credited as being regulars on shows that I know that they exist, but I've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are, you know, actors like Bruce Davison, who's awesome.
Yeah, and he's probably the most recognizable, yeah, arguably. Yeah,
for sure.
He's been around for a long time, and he was nominated for an Oscar.
Was he really? What for? I didn't know that.
On here on IMDb, it says he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Longtime Companion from 1989.
I don't even know what that is.
I think it's an independent film. I believe it's about it's about the AIDS epidemic in the 1980s.
Yeah, clearly I'm not as big a movie fan as I thought. Maybe, I don't know. Look,
well, I haven't seen it, so.
Oh, fair enough. See, I know him as the guy in Titanic 2.
Which I think he also directed.
No, he didn't direct Titanic 2.
Let me see. No, he didn't.
No, he
but
was
he has directed a few things.
He has the best lines in that movie. But no, okay, so the gist of this, like you said, it's all of these actors who are very familiar to you. They're sort of household faces who you don't necessarily can put a name to it. And they discuss their experience in the acting industry, just in Hollywood and in TV auditions and that sort of thing. They talk all about the engaging ways that they are approached by fans who still don't quite know their name, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's
or
it's
who think are really their character.
Oh yeah, exactly. There's that too. Well, and you know what, in a way we do that. We do identify famous actors with their characters, and
when they get typecast,
but they capitalize on that. I mean, the whole reason they, as actors, become popular, it's because there's a familiarity where we feel like we know them. So it shouldn't come as much of a surprise to them when they're approached in the street. People feel like they are their friends because we spend ridiculous amounts of time, you know, watching them on the screen. So I get that, like that. I'm not one to, I don't tend to, I get starstruck in the sense that when I see someone who I respect and is famous, I get all, like, I get that sensation of, this is really cool. But I've never really approached anyone and said, oh, you know, this is blah, blah, blah. Like, I just don't have the self-confidence.
Yeah. Or you don't want to be like you don't want to be that obnoxious fan.
Yeah, seriously. So I'll never be at the other end of those stories, but, I don't know, what part of it is there anything you didn't like about the documentary? Other than the fact, I'll throw it out quickly before I'm interrupting you.
It's been a while since I've seen it. You saw it recently. I saw it quite a while ago.
Okay. It's all just talking heads.
Yeah. It's something you could just watch on YouTube. I mean, it's not, you know, it's a pretty, straightforward, talking head kind of, it's not, you know, wonderfully made or anything. It's not Errol Morris documentary or anything.
There's no narrative arc or real development.
And
the one thing I found is that it does jump around, sort of the way we do our podcast. It jumps around a bit, and it was a little less coherent. I felt like it could have been themed out a little better, where if you had multiple actors talking about a similar aspect of the industry at the same time, but it definitely seemed to bounce all over the place, and I found that a little discombobulating.
I can recommend it highly to anyone who seriously wants to be an actor, though, and wants to do that, you know, move out to LA and pursue their dream. I think, you know, watching this documentary will give them a real lesson in how difficult that is.
It's a bucket of cold water.
Yeah, definitely. Let's say you get a gig on a TV series and you think, oh my God, I've made it. But it's like, it shows you that, you know, even when you get some little taste of success, it doesn't necessarily last. And then you could go back to working at McDonald's or, you know, moving out of your house or something, you know, like it shows a lot of the hardships that these actors have gone through even after they've gotten some serious work.
Mm-hmm. And even just the way that there was one particular actor who talked a lot about how you would try and get a concentration of work for a short period so that your work trend would allow you to successfully apply for unemployment insurance, which you could then use for, you know, X amount of months before getting another job. Like it really gave you a good sense of the grind of just how it's not the most, well, it's absolutely not the most stable way to make a living. There's really no sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had really great stories about those lows, those moments where they, I think, looked in the mirror and said, hey, am I really cut out to do this? This is some serious business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I took from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So it is worthwhile in that sense.
Yeah.
It is a good, you know, hard lesson for people who, you know, maybe have their head in the clouds and they want to be the next Tom Cruise. You know, and you probably have maybe like a 99.9 chance of failure.
Mm. Yeah. The one thing I thought was kind of odd too, and I don't know if this occurred to you when you watched it, is that there's no, it's all men. And I don't know if quote unquote character actors, because it's interesting because what they all refer to themselves as character actors, but I guess and I think it's more a modern character actor is a little different than I think what we traditionally would consider a character actor. I don't know if you...
There are female character actors, but I think maybe it's predominantly more of a male thing.
Mm.
Because with women, it's all about being an ingenue or the next it girl. You know, they're actresses or, you know, if they get noticed, they get molded a lot differently.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously there are lots of female character actors where you know their face and you see them in X number of TV series or movies, but I think maybe it's more of a male thing. So maybe that's why.
Okay. No, I'll buy that.
You'll buy that?
Makes sense. But yeah, I said filter because I'll buy that. I'll buy that for a dollar. Oh no, I'll buy that. But I wanted to throw it out because I did find it to be a fascinating premise for documentary. I think it could have been a better documentary, but it goes by fast and you do learn a lot. And I think that since then, there was one of the particular actors, I mentioned Prison Break earlier, I've never seen it. He was more of a physically built, sort of more intimidating.
Oh, I know who you're talking
actor.
About. Yeah, he's like a really big, bulky guy.
Yeah. He nails it. Like he steals the show. He's got a real sense of humor and his storytelling abilities outshine all of the other character actors, which is funny because I mean, in a way, it shows you just how charismatic he is. And I'm gonna make a point of actually trying to check out some stuff with him in it, specifically because he just really caught me as being an interesting person in this documentary. So I'm going to try and check out some stuff that he's been in. But it's all been mostly TV stuff, which doesn't fare well so much for me. But I'm definitely going to try and do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you must have been – like, I mean, I don't want to just talk about documentaries this month. You must have seen some then or
something.
I've
seen some movies.
You've seen some? Well, it's such an understatement.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, I'll pick out the ones that I feel are worth talking about. And I'll start with a couple of older titles.
Okay.
That I thought were really terrific. Have you ever seen The Naked Prey?
No.
This is a movie from 1966.
Okay.
It was directed and starring Cornel Wilde, who was a character actor from the 40s and the 50s. And I guess this was maybe somewhat of a vanity project for him or something. But it's this really like beautifully directed, really thrilling adventure story about this American who's in Africa and he speaks all the languages and he understands the tribes and their customs. And through a really bad mistake, from someone he's on an expedition with. He becomes a hunted man after his crew are killed, and he is on the run from these tribesmen who are out for his blood. So it's basically the whole movie is this big foot chase. And it's just a really, like, exciting, thrilling movie. I saw it on Netflix, in the Netflix UK, which I got access to. And it's, yeah, it's really, Criterion put out a DVD of it, though. And it's really, it's a fantastic movie. Maybe not the most, I mean, a lot of people watching it today will probably point out the fact that it's probably not the most politically correct movie, but political correctness I could care less about.
Well, you have to watch things in context of their time. And
definitely. You know, I mean, I guess people will find it ridiculous that it's a white man outrunning, you know, five natives of that country, you know, and he's winning, you know, an American fish out of water. But aside from that, you know, if you suspend disbelief, it's really like entertaining consistently from beginning to end.
I don't know much about it. I'm just looking up a little bit about it. When did you watch it though? Did you watch it recently?
I watched it, a couple weeks ago. And okay. Martin Scorsese, I believe, championed this movie quite a bit.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, like, how it came onto your radar. Other than the Criterion release, I was wondering if there was another way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe Paramount Pictures put it out originally back in the 60s, but it's, even today, it's still a really entertaining movie.
How's the cinematography in this one? Because I have a sneaking suspicion that I just have this image of him like running across wastelands.
It's really strikingly. Like, I don't know. It's really strikingly shot.
Okay.
And directed. I mean, that's one of its strengths, is just the look of the movie.
Cool. That one sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not very familiar with Cornel Wilde, to be quite honest.
I wasn't either. I actually saw I ended up seeing another one of his movies a few nights ago. Not that I like wanted to seek out another Cornel Wilde movie. He just happened to be in it. I have this box set of Samuel Fuller movies. I have two box sets, one from Criterion of the first three movies he directed, and then one that Sony put out, which has a couple movies that he directed plus a whole bunch of movies that he just wrote.
Okay.
Because he wrote during the studio system, he wrote a whole bunch of basically B movies before he went off to World War II. I guess before and after. And one of them I watched, I'm not really recommending this movie, but just, you know, apropos of Cornel Wilde.
As an aside.
Yeah, it's called Shockproof, and it's basically Cornel Wilde is this parole officer who falls in love with one of his detainees, who's this beautiful woman who committed a murder and wants to get her life back together, and they go on the lam. It's kind of a film noir, but it's not, it's a little silly, the way it unfolds. So it's not, I can't say it's pretty conventional. It's not a terrific movie the way that, Naked Prey is kind of you could see it as sort of a conventional adventure story, but there's something about it that makes it seem more than that, just the way it's made.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't really recommend Shockproof, but definitely check out Naked Prey for sure.
Adding it to my infinitely long list.
Yeah, the pile of shame. Adding it to the pile of shame. The other older movie I want to talk about isn't as old. I watched it last night, and it's a movie that I've been wanting to see for years, and it's just, you know, I finally caught up to it now, is Wim Wenders' Paris, Texas.
Oh, cool.
Which I thought was just an engrossing, it's interesting. It's this German new wave director making this story of Americana, you know, Harry Dean Stanton comes out of the desert, and his brother, you know, he's kind of been on his own, kind of gone a little crazy, gets reunited with his son. I don't know how familiar people are with the plot, but I was really taken by this movie quite a bit. Have you seen it?
I saw it a long time ago when I went on sort of a Wim Wenders kick, and I don't remember it super well, but I remember really liking it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember how, go ahead. Let's go into spoiler zone. Remind me how the final act goes, and I think it'll kickstart me into.
There's a very famous scene at the end of the movie of his son is living with his brother and his wife, and he is basically the kid's parents. He calls them mom and dad, and then Harry Dean Stanton is his father. He was in exile for some reason that you find out way later in the film. And he wants to, his brother feels, this is his father. He should get to know him. He should be in his life. And he kind of sort of kidnaps him and says, we're going to go find your mother because I want you to be with your mother. So they go to Houston. They go from L.A. to Houston in a car, and they bond. And the famous scene at the end is where Harry Dean Stanton finds her working in a peep show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting. I haven't seen this in a movie, and I think Wim Wenders said that he kind of invented this. I don't know if peep shows like this actually exist, where you walk behind a curtain, there's like number 8, number 9. You walk behind a numbered curtain into a little cubby hole that leads to a door, and on the door there's a title, like a scenario, like diner, hotel room, and then you walk in, and there's a little desk with a phone and a one-way mirror, and then the woman comes in on the other side in this room, and it's like a theme room,
mm-hmm.
and she's dressed in a costume, and I guess she's supposed to put on some sort of sex show for him based on that theme. And that's how he finds her, and that's how he kind of, faces her after being away for 4 years, and they have conversation where it's revealed that she can't see him through the mirror, but he basically lets her know, that this is me, this is your ex-husband.
Yep. No, that sounds familiar. I need to rewatch it.
Mm-hmm.
Need to revisit it. Have you seen much of Wenders stuff? Or
I've seen a few things. I've seen The American Friend, which he made with Dennis Hopper.
Yeah.
Which I like quite a bit. But I mean, I haven't seen a whole bunch of. He's made quite a few movies, and I haven't really seen a whole lot of them, to be honest.
American Friend is excellent. I actually watched that not too well.
That's Dennis Hopper playing Tom Ripley, right? As in the talented Mr. Ripley. I believe so.
Is that the might connection? Maybe.
That might have been another movie.
I don't think that's that, because that's the one where Bruno Ganz plays the he's a shopkeeper who has health issues and gets into shady business to try and pay his health bills.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. There might be a Ripley connection. There's been so many damn adaptations of those books that I've not necessarily kept it all straight. I would have to check. Have you ever seen Until the End of the World?
No.
Okay, you should, because it's pretty much the best movie ever.
Okay.
just saying, I'm just throwing it out
next
there.
To Sharknado.
Well, I mean, okay, maybe it's not that good, but no. Until the End of the World is seriously one of the best, just crazy science fiction movies ever. Yeah, I think you'd really dig it. Just that's my random recommendation.
And one other movie that I want to talk about.
Get a kick out of it.
Yeah, one other movie I want to recommend is a more recent movie called The Hunt with Mads Mikkelsen. It's a Danish film.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this?
I have, yes.
He plays a preschool teacher who is wrongfully accused of pedophilia through a misunderstanding. And he lives in this small village, and the entire town, including his friends, all turn on him and, adopt this mob mentality because he's accused of something he didn't do. And they have no evidence against him. They just basically the child lies about it for basically they ask the child if he did this, and she says yes, but I think she says yes because she feels, well, they want me to say yes,
right?
So that leads to this this downfall that he experiences, where he can't even, he loses his job, he loses his friends, he can't go into the grocery store without being kicked out. So you just feel for him, and it's a really powerful performance by Mikkelsen, mm-hmm. who's known as Hannibal Lecter on TV now. So I mean, he's known for his darker roles, and here he's playing kind of a regular guy,
right?
And he's really great in it.
Yeah,
so that's my other recommendation.
That's your other recommendation. Cool. You know what's crazy is this episode is going to come out, and it's going to be the month of October, and traditionally, the month of October for me is almost exclusively genre films or horror films, I should say. And I kind of have a small recommendation that I think everyone should go watch. And I bet you you've seen Mr. Vampire. Have you ever seen?
No. That's the Hong Kong film, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
No, I haven't. Is that Choi Hark?
It's no. I don't think he directed. He may have directed one of the sequels, but he definitely did not. I said definitely as though I'm 100% sure. But no, I don't believe he directed the first one. But that's not even the movie I'm recommending. I randomly watched a movie that a buddy of mine lent me. I guess it's not so random, but he lent me a movie called Magic Cop. I watched it and loved it. Fell head over heels with it. It's a supernatural investigation thriller, drama, romantic comedy. And just like, truly Hong Kong to the nth degree, which is one of those kind of special films that they make with the best practical special effects out there. Mm-hmm. But it's just the reason I mentioned Mr. Vampire is that this is technically Mr. Vampire Part 5, though I haven't seen the other four. So just as I think I want you to see it specifically.
So you don't have to see the, you don't have to see the other Mr. Vampires.
No. Okay. No. I've not, there's no continuity other than the fact that the lead character, this sort of supernatural investigator, is the constant throughout the films, but there's no narrative string per se. You got to see this movie. That's, you have to see it.
Well, I'm sold on the title. Again, back to titles.
Yeah,
the
Magic Cop.
The importance of simple titles, punchy titles.
And you'll see the cover of the DVD, and that'll make concrete your decision.
It's funny. Magic Cop sounds like a really bad kids movie.
This could not be farther from a kid's film, and it is definitely not bad.
Okay, there we go.
That's just because you're confusing it with Kindergarten.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening there.
Which isn't really a good movie for kids to watch. I mean, if you remember that movie quite a bit.
Well, again, it's another one of those cases where...
And I love that movie as a kid.
You know what? Let's loop it all around. Clean Flicks, right? The documentary there's the famous scene in Kindergarten Cop where the little kid gets up and he's like, boys have a penis and girls have a vagina.
Yeah.
You know that line? They cut that line out of that movie, but still leave in sort of, the gunfight sequences at the beginning of the movie. But the mere mention of vagina and penis, it offends him so severely that they need to edit it out of the film.
And he's just stating facts, the kid.
Yeah, the kid's just like, that's a fact.
He's right. He's using the right terminology.
I was just going to say, right terminology. It's smart, like people could maybe learn something from that. And that's the kind of thing they edit out.
Yeah. Well, that's what bugs me about censors is context means nothing to them.
No.
It just, the word in and of itself is something that's like a weapon to them that they're afraid of.
And it makes it just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, sorry. That's how I got. See, Magic Cop, Kindergarten Cop, Clean Flicks, bam.
It all comes together.
Yeah, I'm high-fiving myself. It's also, I'm just clapping, I guess.
Well, our listeners can high-five themselves by visiting us on iTunes, subscribing to our show on iTunes, where they can listen to all previous, we're on episode 26 now, I think.
That sounds about right.
It's funny how we're at 26 and I'm already losing count.
Well, it's just because it's so epic.
Yeah, we have an arc. We're like Breaking Bad.
Oh, man. I remember way back, I think it was like episode 1, where you said Breaking Bad is like the best movie that's not a movie.
Yeah.
Does that still stand, even with that final episode?
Yeah, I really like the final episode. I know people have their opinions about it, but I think it finished quite impeccably.
Okay.
Did you follow it at all?
I've not seen an episode, no.
Okay.
So,
I won't say anything further.
Well, I'm not that invested. I was just curious if it was still living up to that.
Yeah, no, it's great. I loved it. And I'm glad it's over. I'm glad that it had a beginning, a middle, and an end, unlike a lot of TV shows that aren't about anything and they go on for 20 seasons.
Right, right.
You know? And it's good for the people who are sick of hearing about how great Breaking Bad is. You know, it's now over for them, so.
Yeah. But the nice thing about once something's over, I'm more inclined to watch it because I know that it's complete. I know I'm in for as opposed to an open-ended series. But anyways, I totally digressed on your excellent segue to get people to hook up onto our blog or subscribe to iTunes. So go for it.
Yeah. Living in Letterboxd, you can find on iTunes. Please subscribe. You can also find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. And our main site, which is letterboxpod.blogspot.ca, where you can find all our previous episodes and check us out. And please leave us questions and comments and suggestions.
We like those.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just don't be a troll or a dick, you know. Be constructive. Be supportive. We need support.
You want to talk about it? Everything okay?
Yeah, I need support. I need support.
All right.
I wasn't gonna open that vein, you know, for this episode particularly, but now we're there.
So that'll be episode 27.
Yes, absolutely. We'll get deep into my wounded psyche in the next episode, and we'll talk about some movies as well on the side.
You'll record while laying on a couch, laying on a comfortable couch. I think that would be good.
Yeah, that'll be our theme show for next month.
Excellent. Cool. Well, I'm gonna go and do some research. I'm gonna start on that right now.
Yeah, check out Naked Prey and check out The Hunt
Do yourself an October Halloween treat and watch The Magic Cop.
Yeah, a little bit of Magic Cop, because cops are magical.
Whatever, when they do it like an English language adaptation and it stars Mads Mikkelsen, then you'll be all about it too.
Oh, there we go. Talk about coming full circle.
Yeah, exactly. But cool. All right, man. I think that's it.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. See you next month.
Indeed.
Hey folks, just one last thing. I wanted to mention that the music you hear every month on this podcast is composed by the Hylotrons. Visit their website, hylotrons.tumblr.com.